Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The following is a presentation of the Force Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Force Center podcast feed, and this is the Mandalorian Report, episode 12. I think my count sometimes changes, but I'm Ken Napsok.
And I'm Joseph Scrimshaw, and the count is mysterious. That's just the way of things when you're counting different episode numbers of shows and different episode numbers of podcasts. But this episode, we are going to be talking about Disney Gallery, : The Mandalorian, : technology.
Oh, yeah. And this episode is being released on May 25th, which is a day and date of many meanings. Memorial Day. Thank you to all those that have served and continue to serve. Tal Day for my fellow Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy fans. Rest in peace, Douglas Adams. And, Joseph, the anniversary of the release of Solo.
That is right. It's the anniversary of the release of Star Wars, Return of the Jedi, and Solo. But the reason that we bring up Solo in particular is our friends over at the Resistance Broadcast have made a point of having this day be a celebration of Solo and a desire for more with the hashtag Make Solo 2 Happen. And also the idea that that isn't just, hey, of course, you should make another large budget Solo movie released in theaters, but just the pushing for fans, letting the powers that be know we really like those characters, those ideas. We would love to see more of Enfys Nest, more of Kira versus Maul, more of all those great storylines and story threads that get got started in Solo, since since it's that day, I thought that we should shout out that we agree. We want more of those characters, right?
Absolutely. Come on. Give me more Infant's Nest. You met Kira versus Maul. Kira, just give me more Kira. I'll take a backstory with some Val and Beckett adventures. I'll take whatever you need coming out of this. And of course, Han, younger Lando, loved it all. We're big fans of the movie here. And yeah, we are with you all too. Make Solo 2 happen is a nice sentiment, whether those kind of things work or not. Sometimes they do, as we've seen recently, but different discussion. And sometimes, like Joseph said, it's just kind of paying homage to our love of this property and the characters that were put forth in that story. So we are here for that as well. Happy anniversary, Solo.
Yeah.
So, yeah, with that said, we are going to dive into, Joseph says, Disney Gallery, Star Wars, The Mandalorian, the technology / dinner with fives of or five of John Favreau's friends. Another great episode. Joseph, this is kind of the one that we were waiting for in a way. I mean, there's a lot of, we're still waiting for the Werner Herzog only episode. There might be a episode just about the child. We'll see. We don't know. But this is the one that finally took that big dive into the secrets of the volume. And I will admit up top, I got a little lost in this episode, and I love it because I'm not super smart when it comes to tech terms. And I started to study becoming a director. I did about a year or so of pre-film school kind of classes and realized, nah, directing's more than just standing on a set and pointing with an actor for a promotional photo.
You also have to be good at wearing a ball cap, which you are.
I am good with a ball cap and a beanie, right? Yeah, all those things. And that's where I just was like, I don't have the mind for it. My dad does. I didn't get that part of his brain. So this episode made me feel wonderfully lost, if that makes any sense. How did this episode hit with you just in that overall kind of vibe?
Yeah, it was really exciting because I like the tech side of Star Wars. We're going to talk a lot about all of the legacy of that. And as it started, I was like, ooh, this is intriguing, but is this going to be more about the tech and less about the narrative? And like, because of my background, all of the actors talking about the way they approach their scenes and that was great. But I was really intrigued by this episode because the technology is amazing. It has that tie to the history of Star Wars. And to see the actual people sitting and talking about how it affected them emotionally and how it affected their storytelling got to that deeper layer. So it wasn't just, the dry sort of like, here's exactly how many pixels are in each panel, you know?
Yeah. We always watch, at least I do watch first, and then we go, I'll do a second pass or third pass of the episode to do the notes. And I know you kind of watch the same way. You just want to take it in as a fan first, Joseph. First time around, I was like, man, how are we going to break this down? Because there is a lot of tech stuff, a lot of wonderful tech stuff. How does that translate to the spirit of Star Wars? And we're going to get into some discussion points later because second viewing, I was like, oh, yeah, it's all there. This is all part of the tapestry of Star Wars. And that made me just excited for this episode. Let's start here, though. Can we go back in time a little bit? We had heard about this, Joseph. We heard about this thing called the volume, and we heard. I remember hearing a clip of Bill Burr describing being on the set for episode 6, and just kind of. I thought I had an understanding of it. Even going back and talking about Solo, I love some of the way they did some of the shots in the Falcon cockpit, and kind of you get Alden's real reaction to it. I'm like, all right, I get it. I think I understand. What were your thoughts of the volume going into this episode based on what you had heard, read, and occasionally seen in the past? So before we learned more, what was your point of view on the volume?
Yeah, my journey with the volume was, I think I first heard Giancarlo Esposito talking about it in an interview before we'd seen anything of The Mandalorian, and I was a little concerned. I was a little concerned that it would look like, oh, everything is very flat because the background is just projected. And then when I saw the actual show, I was like, wow, I can tell that something's kind of different. But honestly, I can't tell which, like some of the scenes are like, they went to a desert. Come on, that sunset's real. That's a desert, right? So once I saw the actual show, I started concerned. Then I was relieved when I saw the actual show. And then as I started to hear more about it after I'd actually seen it, I was really intrigued. And now, when I watch this episode of the Disney Gallery, I'm just excited. I'm excited about what all can be done with this technology. So it's been a really good journey for me, from concerned to excited.
Yeah, I'm about the same. And some of the stuff, even during reviewing the show, when it was in its run, like I was a little grumpy on some of the stuff. We'll talk about that. But as I learned in this episode, and learned even some of the earlier Disney Gallery episodes, I was like, oh, yeah, they got me. They got me. So maybe, Ken, you better shut up, because it's more advanced than you thought. And this is why you're not making the show and Favreau is. I'm with you, too. And excited, because it's only going to get better. Even going back to Jar Jar in episode one, and then he jumped to Circus and Gollum and Lord of the Rings. It has to start somewhere, and this is where it's starting, and that just means it's going to get better, and that does make me excited about this technology.
Yeah.
So that's what we thought about the volume, and then we learned a lot about the volume there. Let's start here where the episode starts, with Favreau kind of giving this little preamble, this little prologue to everything, and Star Wars and groundbreaking technology for making these films and shows. It does go hand in hand. We talked about it a lot, about the accomplishments of George and Lucasfilm and all the companies that sprung from that. And Favreau began talking this episode about the journey he and his filmmaking teams have taken to get to this point, which I thought was pretty impressive, even though you're aware of it already. You know, I'm a Favreau fan. I like Swingers. I even own Made on DVD. And I sometimes maybe overlook the fact that, no, this guy's, you know, I'm not going to say he's a Lucas-like genius or anything. I don't think John would say that about himself either. But Joseph, let's just start here before we even get in the main question. Like, he's all about kind of finding new ways to make things. And I like that.
Yeah, no, the way he talks about film throughout this whole thing, he is clearly such a fan and a student and a historian of film on every level, it seems like, from character tropes to genre ideas to, you know, talking about how different actors were cast because they were physically able to actually be cowboys back in the day. And then you get to this episode and he's like, oh, he is really a fan and a historian of every element of film, including the progression of technological advancement, you know. And it's fascinating to see somebody who's like, this is my whole thing. I want to be involved in every part of film, from being an actor to being an innovator of technology. I'm a student of it. And then I want to also cast myself in the forward moving history of film as well.
He just doesn't know Empire Strikes Back beat for beat, and that's okay. So what do you feel about John's kind of desire to help create technological advancements and be a part of that, like you just said, part of the legacy of making things a little better, a little different? And what do you think about that being married to the storytelling of Star Wars? Because that does go hand in hand, and he's now in the center of it. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just kind of this great, perfect marriage. There's so much about Star Wars, the power of it, that can be captured by Luke staring off at those twin suns, right? Of, you know, thinking that you have a larger destiny, but also there's just this sort of dreaming of like, there's more out there. I want to go see it. And you combine that sort of, I want to take my first steps in the larger galaxy, the larger world, with this technological side of, you can be sitting around in your college dorm or your coffee shop and you can dream strange exotic worlds with weird aliens and strange dripping alive plants and all that. And like, but I can dream that, but can I make that a reality? And that's where the fussy technological side of it suddenly marries with the romantic dreamer side of it. And that's what I really liked about this episode, is that I got that sense of, I'm not just excited about this because, like, hey, I made a breakthrough and I got a patent or anything sort of more mercenary like that. It's about, hey, if I dream something, I can throw it up on the wall and it can be real. And I can not just stare at the twin sunsets. I can launch into space and have an adventure.
Yeah. You're talking and I'm going to obviously George, but George in the 90s, special edition George. Maligned as they might be still in some circles, I get the bigger argument of, you know, you're changing art and what does that mean? I understand all that, but I still go to George going, I dreamed this back then and I couldn't do it, I'm going to try to do it now and expand the story in the way I want to with the technology. I know there's a connective spirit there, and I want to actually jump ahead in our notes and come back to another question. But there was a point visual effects supervisor Richard Bluff mentioned trying to make what John, quote, would like to try and do on the show, trying to make that happen. Well, John talked about the think tank of minds he brought together, and they brought together tasks with making it a reality. And you just kind of touched upon it a little bit, but what part of the lessons and spirit of Star Wars does that connect to for us? Because a little bit what you're saying, it is that wonder. I was blown away. I was like, oh, that's Star Wars.
Yeah, I think there's a part of it that there's this very human quality, not deifying at all, but a very human quality to Lucas, where particularly in the later stages of his career, and I guess by later stage of his career, I mean everything after the original trilogy, that he sees himself as the mentor whose job it is to push people forward. I think of those behind the scenes for Phantom Menace when he's got the storyboards and he's like highlighting everything. Yes. That's a visual effect shot. And then it's almost like that was like an early draft of The Office. You cut back to all of the people who actually have to make it happen. And they're just like, damn it. How the hell? Like, I mean, Jim could do a take to the camera right there and it would fit in for the emotion of that. And it's the mentor pushing the students to go, you can, I know this is a challenge, but I believe in you, you can do it. And to me, that connects to all of Yoda's teachings in Dagobah, but really like, always with you, it cannot be done, or, you know, unlearn what you have learned. Just this spirit of, hey, there's probably a way to do this that you haven't thought of, but you will, if you don't just say this is impossible, that you can find it. Makes me think of Luke on Crait, just because that is a creative solution to a problem. And then it's also very similar to actual special effects of like, it's an amazing special effect. He's not actually there. It's a creative solution to a problem, and it's amazing force power special effect.
Yeah. It's VR Luke. Absolutely is. There's just some kind of, you talked about do or do not. I mean, I was blown away. We're going to address it a little bit later here with some of the risks, but it's blown away. Just like, this was something that just were like, well, we did this, we did that. Can we get some people? And they said several times, a lot of this is technology that exists, you know, and a lot of times George and his guys and Dykstra and all those ones back in the day and early ILM and Van Nuys were like, well, we don't have it. Let's create it. But this was like, a lot of stuff existed, but let's put it all together. There's some people who've come close. And I thought, wow, this all could not have worked. This could not have worked. And what kind of a do or do not, what kind of be confident and go forward and kind of don't be afraid to let go of what you knew before and choose a new path. To me, that just struck me as the heart of Star Wars a lot.
Yeah. And if something didn't quite work, they would have figured out another way, right?
Absolutely. They would need to.
Yeah, because they committed to it. And I think that's a part of it, is like, once you set yourself off on that path, you know, I sometimes describe just the creative process as throwing yourself off a cliff, and it's joyful and fun at the beginning because you're just falling and it's free. And then once you've done that, you have to figure out how you're going to land. And I feel like that's the spirit of this, of, yep, we're going to take a big swing and we will find a way to make it work.
So, hey, this is kind of an overall thoughts kind of question, going back to the top here, but what were the big, because we've asked this before on previous episodes, and we've got little nuggets of this, but this is the one where it's all big. What were the big behind the scenes revelations for us in this episode?
I think for me, the technology wise, I think I heard bits and pieces about video game, you know, engine, like, cool, great, makes sense. The whole parallax thing of the camera and being able to talk to the wall and it shifting the actual image the way you do in a video game. That was the like, oh, I didn't really get it until I saw it kind of thing.
Yeah. We're going to dive into that in a bit, but I'm right there with you on that. We're just, believe it or not, like, kind of dumbed it down for me. Like, oh, you mean like when I ride my horse on Red Dead Redemption? So that was there. And also just on individual levels, I mentioned it earlier, but there's some scenes and I'll point to some of them throughout this episode of like, that scene, I don't know, I didn't really like the way that looked. I understood what it is. It probably will get better. But let me be grumpy about this scene. And then there was, they showed the clip of them in the volume for the one-on-one scenes or with the stormtroopers around, but Mando and Werner Herzog. And I went, oh, that was mostly the volume. Damn it. Damn it. They got me. They got me. And that was similar to the one of seeing, you know, Gina Carano riding in the cart, on the Bryce Dallas Howard episode four. Like, they weren't in a forest. I thought they went out to a forest. And there are some backlot stuff. We know that. We know that because the secret set shots and everything. We understand that, which is cool in its own way. But they got me. They got me. And I got to admit it. I've been had in a good way.
Yeah. Yeah. And watching it, the other thing that struck me when they were talking about everything they could do in the volume is like, well, why do they have that backlot? Oh, that's where all the shooting and explosions. Okay. So
yeah,
that's the limit of the volume. They're probably not going to set off actual explosives in the volume.
Yeah. For now, until they make it even bigger. Like it's a Cinerama dome size.
Yeah. The volume with explosions.
Let's get to the volume. This is, you mentioned it, but this is what I loved. I love Favreau mentioned it up top of, hey, when you see some of the old effects that don't work in movies, even though at the time they kind of did, but over time, you see, it always comes down to lighting to me. And that's for me as a real layman's point of view. And he kind of mentioned it there. So one of the big advantages of working in the volume is that everything can be captured in camera, which is absolutely crazy. Just some of the stuff they were seeing there. This helps create what is lacking, as I said, in many older CGI, visual effects, green screen-based content, this parallax change you talked about. And I even wrote this down so I could even understand it better in my mind. This is the effect whereby, I love that term, whereby the position or direction of an object appears to differ when viewed from different positions. This is riding around in the wilderness on Red Dead Redemption 2 for me. So this was a great big technological thing. The lighting looks real. Baz Iodine is talking about the cinematographer talking about how he could do, you know, it was all in camera and you could light properly for that. Fancy tech talk aside, Joseph, what was your reaction to that as a storyteller, as someone, you are a playwright, you played around in live 3D sets, you know, audience, like it's all real. You can touch it. You can feel it. And what was your reaction to that as a storyteller?
Yeah, I had a really visceral reaction to when I go and see a stage, especially one that I haven't been to before, and particularly if it's a interesting stage, like something that has a thrust, but then there's a little staircase or maybe like a little walkway or catwalk that it's exposed, or like an aisle that extends into the audience in a weird way. And you immediately just get so enraptured with the idea of, ooh, let's play. I could use this space. Yeah. And you don't even know what the story is or what you're going to do in that space, but you just start thinking, oh, wow, somebody could face the audience that way. And then somebody could be up on that like sort of position of power on the slightly raised part of the stage. And there is just a spirit of play. And that's what I was overwhelmed with this whole episode, watching all of the actors and the tech people talk about, like, well, look, we just throw stuff up on the screen. You know, we get the set pieces in and then we're ready to go. It's all now just about the words and the characters and the dynamic and the energy, and we're ready to play.
Yeah, like what Filoni said, like, 30 minutes, you got a new set going.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the possibilities. I mean, it's really about the possibilities, and that got me excited for what will come even more down the line. You know, bigger stories, bigger set pieces, bigger scenes. That's really exciting to me.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the actors talk about it more and sort of all the creators, but that sense of, we can really just focus on the meat and potatoes of the scene because we're not as concerned about eyeline and green screen and agreeing on where things are and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's and I still love, and there's some revelations later that I definitely want to talk about, but I still love practical. I still love going out to location. I still love watching that Rise of Skywalker documentary and hearing, you know, Abrams say to John Boyega, oh, we're out here because the lighting is more real. That's why we're doing the speeder chase out here. I love all that. I don't want any of that to change, but I'm more confident that more things can be done this way. And again, I won't know.
Exactly.
It's all about me and what I feel. No. So I love that. Yeah. And just, I thought about theater a lot. I am not as experienced and well-versed in it as you are, sir, but like my old theater days way back in the beginning, like it is different. And it is all this big technology just means you can have even more quiet, intimate scenes with great lines and characters dealing with each other one-on-one to me.
Yeah, exactly.
Go big to go small. One of the big keys to making the volume in this approach to shooting, making this approach to shooting work, was a company taking the risk to make a project with it. Favreau said that, as he said, look, this is other people have come close. Other people have thought about things like this, but someone's got to say, let's do it. And he cited Kathleen Kennedy, ILM, of course, and Lucasfilm, and said, hey, look, they took that risk. This is a leading question, Joseph. I'm leading. Leading the witness. How proud did that make you feel as a Star Wars fan?
It makes me feel very proud, I say, answering the leading question the way you expected. kind of bumps me out. No, I think it is great. I do feel good about supporting this philosophy, supporting the kind of corporation that I think Lucasfilm is, that Kathleen Kennedy is trying to run. That it represents ideas that mean a lot to me in the story of Star Wars, which is this cocktail of the old and new, as we often talk about it, that goes back to A New Hope, where on one hand, Lucas is like, how can I reach back to the oldest, deepest myths that will just resonate with people because they feel true, because they've heard that story before, and it relates to something deep and true about our cultural experience. Also, I want to make technology that you've never, ever seen before. And to see that tradition continue from the perspective of Lucasfilm saying, we have a tradition here. Our old, ancient thing to be respected is that we always try new things. It's like a great marriage of the old and new. And in a way, the production of the shows and the movies mirroring the morals of the shows and the movies.
Yeah, well said. Yeah, it's what makes George so excited, and that carries on. And I don't know, I just was really proud seeing Kathleen Kennedy at the table and saying, yeah, you know, based on, again, a lot of stuff she's done before. She talked about some with Indian in the Cupboard, with the movie they had made, just like going, yeah, we're gonna do this, and we're gonna base an entire streaming service on it. If this comes out of the gate and it doesn't work story-wise and also tech-wise, a lot of things fall flat. And I don't know. I had a moment of just like, yeah, this is part of the Star Wars story. And they did it. And I enjoyed that. Could have been anyone else. Like Favreau said, could have been anyone else. It took them to make that risk. So I enjoyed that a lot. Any thoughts on kind of the opening stuff here? Or should we just go ahead and take a break, Joseph?
Let's take a break.
Yes, a break is what we'll take. And on the other side, we're going to start talking a little bit more about the actual things we saw in the setups. Rick Famuyiwa coming in with some great discussion points as well, because he always seems to do. And more, we are roaming around the volume here on the Mandalorian Report. See you on the other side.
This podcast is brought to you by eHarmony, the dating app to find someone you can be yourself with. Why doesn't eHarmony allow copy and paste in first messages? Because you are unique, and your conversations should reflect that. eHarmony wants you to find someone who will get you. How are you going to know who gets you if people send you the same generic conversation starters they message everyone else? Conversations that actually help you get to know each other. Imagine that. Get who gets you on eHarmony. Sign up today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome back to the Mandalorian Report here on the Force Center podcast feed. Thank you so much for joining us as we dive into the Disney Gallery, the Mandalorian technology episode. Joseph, we are discussing some things. Look, I get lost on this. My dad's an engineer. I didn't get that side. He loves building things. He builds speakers. I need a better sounding speaker. I'm going to build my own speakers in my house. I wish I had even just an ounce of that. It would help me in the streaming wars on Twitch. You know what I mean? But so I react to just the emotions of things and this. I was really moved as we talked in the first part of just like, all right, this is like a play. This is a really working set. So this takes me to Rick Famuyiwa coming in here from I finally learned how to spell his name because I. Respectful to learn. Now I got to say it better. Famuyiwa. Yeah, Rick. I'm one of his biggest fans now, if you can't tell. He comes in here and he discussed exactly kind of what was pulling me in. He kind of put words to what I was thinking and he did it a lot better than I could. He discussed that the core of this mind-blowing technology was a simple idea. These are fully realized sets and we already discussed it a little bit. But I got to ask you, did this change or embolden your opinion about shooting the show, about the volume compared to what we discussed at the beginning of the show? Does this change your opinion about the shooting this way?
Yeah. It makes me more excited to see even more and different kinds of experimentation in season 2, because I liked what Rick Famuyiwa was saying, that he was coming from this perspective of, okay, you did all of this fancy tech. You spent all this fancy money on pre-visualization. And then imagining the conversation that he described of John Favreau coming in going, no, throw it out. Experiment, play, do whatever. And seeing that break from, all right, I am going to go in and I'm going to do my directing job and I am going to get the absolute best performance I can get out of this person, but they have to stand exactly at this angle because we've already done the pre-visualization. I cannot move the camera an inch. We're doing match moving, all this stuff. And that he's locked in that I'm in a tiny box in how much creativity can I get out of the tiny box? And then to have the idea that the volume is actually up to a point, let's throw that out. You can change the angle. You can change where the person is standing and the background will just move with you. The amount of freedom that gives you to go back to a more traditional way of filming. That's really exciting to think of all the other new directors coming in, you know, especially somebody like Rodriguez, who's played with weird tech before. Mm-hmm. For him to be hearing, I'm sure, from other people, maybe he visited the set and going, how can I go crazy in the volume? Makes me excited for what we're going to see.
Yeah, you touched on one of the things that just pulled me in when he was saying that, because, you know, my uneducated view on this would be like, oh, man, I bet, you know, a lot goes into it. And yeah, look, just shooting, hitting your marks, all those kind of basic things, you know, or have experienced or hear over time are all very true. There's a tech side to even just acting and TV acting and opening up your face and all those kind of wonderful things that I'm not an expert on, but are there. I get those. But to hear him, Favreau just be like, yeah, it doesn't matter. Do what you want. In a roundabout sort of way, I was just like, that is where I'm now really excited about what's going on here.
Yeah.
Supersedes my preconceived notions and my negative thoughts on some of the setups, on some of them. Now I'm like, oh yeah, no. We're back to the core, which to bring in some of the prequel stuff or even the Hobbit trilogy, which Peter Jackson was trying some new things there too. And some of those misfires, and there are in both properties, as much as we love those prequels, it seems like this allows for a little bit more just humanity and therefore emotional connection to come through. Again, much like a stage play, I keep going back to that. I just loved it. I was moved by it in a weird way.
Yeah. And I think that what was moving to me about it was not just the technical realities of, oh, we have a little bit more elbow room, but the spirit of it that Favreau is coming in like your fun uncle going, hey, no, push that thing and see what happens. You know, like that. Yeah. He wants that spirit of exploration to not just be about the technology that allows it, but what does that mean for the story and the actors and the characters and the directors?
We're going to come back to some of that traditional side being married to this technology, but I love this moment here. My mind went in a different direction. They keep mentioning game engine technology, and it is... This is a side note. This just popped in my head. I didn't realize this until I just said this, Joseph. They talked about game engine technology, and that connects me. I keep making these jokes about Red Dead Redemption 2, but it connects me to, oh, the video games I have in my hand or at home, or some of the VR stuff I've experienced, like the Void thing, doing the Star Wars experience over there. It connects to me reading as a kid that the speeder bike sequence was put together with toys that I had. And me back then, 7, 8, going, wait a minute, the power's in my hands too. Not that I went on to become a great filmmaker, but it just kind of gave me that, like, back then, like, wow, this is in my own galaxy. It's in my own hands. And you can dream up something and make it happen. To connect you to just, yeah, game engine technology has got to the point. So it's the same kind of thing. It kind of blew my mind. But then Filoni mentioned, hey, it's like being in the Battle of Hoth. So I got to ask you, based on that, do you just want them to remake Shadows of the Empire now? show where we can learn how to take down AT-ATs in that environment.
Yeah, I would love that. I think that would be great for many fans of that era of Star Wars storytelling. Where my mind went when Filoni was talking about, imagine that you have the entire Battle of Hoth mapped out and you know everything that happens and in sequence and where, and then you can turn around and engage with it. There was that first level of like, oh, this isn't complicated at all. It's a video game. It's like you're saying with Red Dead Redemption, this technology you can understand really easily. Have you ever turned around in a video game?
Yeah. Oh,
then, yeah, I get it. Yeah, it's like Bioshock where you look to the left and stuff that's on the left is there. Got it. But then when he was talking about Battle of Hoth, I was just like, all of the choices that would have to be made to make every beat of the Battle of Hoth absolutely canon in order to render that. Like, nope, that's exactly where that character is. That's exactly when this obscure, that's when Tigran Jamiro gets shot, you know.
I loved it. I also love it keeping it's totally keeping within what we've seen from the show, where they're having this big, heavy discussion, King Kong, everything, and Filoni is us going, yeah, it's like being in the Battle of Hoth.
He is just a lovably always the Star Wars guy in the room, and I really like it.
Yeah. John listed some of his favorite, quote, mind-blowing setups on the volume. I think they cut off the list. I'd love to see the deleted scene where he just does a YouTube video on his favorite volume setups. He mentioned two. The Jawa camp, which at first when he started talking about it, I was like, oh, okay, explain more, John. But he says it was a callback to how they did it on New Hope. And you saw that great footage we're all familiar with. They have Gary Kurtz looking into a camera at the bottom half of a sand crawler. And I was like, oh, yeah. Well, there again, it's the same thing. And I love that. I love that connection again.
Yeah, yeah. No, it is powerful to see. And obviously powerful for Rick, who's directing it.
Mm. Yeah, yeah, you're right. You mentioned it a few times there. And the second one was the sunrise with Fennec and Toro, which I remember watching that. I think that might have been one of the moments where Grace and I are watching it kind of going, she asked that, like, is that like their own location? Like, I'm like, I think I don't know. Maybe that's in that back lot. I don't know. And to see it's just all there on the volume. I was like, all right, I got it. What were some of your favorite, quote, mind blowing setups?
Yeah, I think the Sorgan Forest was amazing to see that in the volume. It was just a brief shot in this episode, but I think some of like the vistas make sense to me, like especially like in the very first episode when he is walking away after making his first capture and you see that big ice extension. It's like, oh yeah, that's a digital extension. Looks great, but that's what it is. But then you get into like some of the more things that could be shot in the real world, like the desert or in particular this forest that's a little bit more of an enclosed space. Mm. And for me, the volume made sense. Like, yeah, you want to project a big sunset. Great. Or, you know, an alien landscape that doesn't exist in reality, but something is sort of dark and enclosed as the forest. That was really interesting to me. And the other one was the lava tunnel. Like, obviously, looking at the lava tunnel, I realized they didn't actually go to a volcano. But I think there's a lot of the shots where there's stuff in the foreground and then there's a big vista.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that the lava tunnel, like they talked about in this episode, is this real traveling down it. And even to the point of getting motion sickness, potentially, that was the one that was like, oh, wow, this can be used in lots of different ways than just there's, you know, a box in the foreground, but the background space.
Yeah. Yeah. No, the lava one is definitely mine. I keep making the jokes about Herzog's office, the client's office. But yeah, the lava one, because again, I could have guessed it. And while watching it, was both into the story beat and the emotions of the story. We're going to come back to that, but I would have been like, yeah, okay. Yeah. It seems like to be that was on the volume, but to see it, to really see it in action behind the scenes, I just went like, that's the stuff. And you're right about the sunsets. The forest kind of blew my mind too. I think the potential, I think this is one of those, that some of the dogfights in space didn't work for me on some level, and this might be where they can start to improve it. But cockpit acting is a tradition in Star Wars, right? We go to Solo and what you were able to do to see how they could go forward, how they could really kind of improve dogfights going forward, and the acting inside ships. It's this ride. it's a ride at Universal Studios. That I was really like, all right, I like these setups. I like it. And I want to see how they can improve just the look of the ships. And that's a minor nitpick on my part. But to see, and we saw a little bit of, like, even episode one of Filoni sitting there with the, you know, an iPad or whatever, a monitor, just on a microphone going, and bank left and bank right. To see it where they have the cockpit and then they have the back part of the Razor Crest. It's like, wow, okay. Yeah, I'm on board for what you can do with that down the line.
Yeah, yeah, and how much more real it can be if actors are able to see jumping to hyperspace for the first time. Like, we've talked a lot about that moment in Solo, but also, like, hey, yeah, really get into that sort of ride stuff if there's another ship flying straight at you and you can just see that and feel that. is, you know, going to bring a lot more reality to the cockpit acting, which is a staple of Star Wars. And we notice as fans, we notice when someone is a great cockpit actor. Obviously, Tally Lintra, perhaps the best cockpit actor of all time.
Bombers keep that tight formation. Hal Hickel mentioned that the volume allowed for all parts of the production to work in a more traditional way. And this is something that I'll start from a personal thing. This affected my view on this tech because and this is a lot of things we've already discussed in this episode, but it feels to me more like a growth and extension of what came before. Set designers, lighting, gaffers, best boys, all those kind of things. Some of those jobs might change, but it allows for everyone's skills to be used and challenged, which I love, because some of the stuff, when I would hear George talk about it years ago and see some of the stuff or read some of the magazines on the shooting, or, you know, seeing Tamara Morrison as Django with a umbrella in the rain on a complete, you know, blue screen. I was there for it. I get it. I respect George. I did then and I do now, but there was a part of me, as someone again, who loves the idea of like, let's travel to Tunisia to shoot, a little bummed about. I love seeing, you know, again, the Phantom Menace has a lot of practical stuff, you know, but I love seeing the shots of the real Falcon in Force Awakens or Solo and all that kind of stuff. And I always, it's selfish. I just don't want to lose it. And I'm not even those people with those jobs. But I think part of the magic of making movies, man, it's part of what pulls people into the business from all sides. I've known set painters. I've known those makeup artists. I've known all those people in town for all these years. And to see, and it struck Grace too, of just to see like, wow, it's all of it. It's just, we're moving forward. And you're going to, again, they had the backlot until they can figure out the inside explosions. They have all stuff. Rise of Skywalker still went. And I think the next Star Wars movie is going to go to some exotic land and shoot. You know, I don't think that's going away. But I am someone who could fear a little change. And that's Sith-like. And I don't want to. And I don't want to let go. But to know that, no, this is just a growth of what came before in a new and exciting way. That absolutely affected me. I don't know if it hit you as hard, but I was like, I love it. I love that there's a real rock being wheeled in.
Yeah, yeah. And when Filoni was talking about like, hey, we can see right then and right there if there's, maybe it was Filoni, maybe it was Hal Hickel, like we can go touch up that rock if we have to, and everybody gets to see that. And the same thing with the lighting design and the costumes. And for me, what I heard that excited me is imagining people where the pain in the ass part of their job might be reduced, and you're just onto what do you actually do? Because, right, if you're a lighting designer or a set designer, you're trying to make sure that your piece looks beautiful and fits in with the whole. Yeah. And in different processes where it's really only the director or certain like higher level people who can truly see and imagine the whole, everything becomes about a different kind of communication, right? But if everybody is standing on the volume together, and everybody is seeing everything at the same time, I would imagine that that is just a great reduction in kind of frustrating parts of communication. Mm. And it can just be about, if my job is to make the rock, not the actor, the rock, but maybe the rock, the fake space rock, look as cool as possible, I get to just focus on that.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, I loved it, man. I loved it. I love, it made me excited. I want to go to the volume. How much for a tour?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, when the theme parks are opened back up, I'm sure there's going to be some mini volumes.
You're talking about this immersion, Joseph, and this is kind of where they went to next to kind of wrap up the show there. They, Giancarlo Esposito and Carl Weathers in particular, talked about the power of seeing what has actually happened. And once again, Carl Weathers, and Esposito had some great stuff too, by the way, but Carl Weathers comes in here, just, I love this guy. He called it liberating. Talked about every actor in a scene not having to imagine what was there. They all can see it. Is the joke about, I just didn't want to fall in the lava. And I go back to, you know, you and I are breaking down the Attack of the Clones on the main show this week, and rewatching that film this weekend, just seeing some of those moments that Natalie Portman has talked about of like, I don't know what I was doing. Hearing some of the stories, and this is, you know, a small snippet of what probably actually happened, but to hear Sir Ian McKellen crying and being frustrated with the process on the Hobbit movies as compared to what was going on with the Lord of the Rings movies with Peter Jackson, you know, just, you know, watching Liam Neeson and Ewan McGregor stare at different eyeballs on Jar Jar Binks and The Phantom Menace. It's just, you're of the time there and you're being groundbreaking there. So you're going to have things that you need to improve. That's even what's going to happen with this stuff. But I loved it because to me, Joseph, this builds that connection with the audience and the content. We are all there because we are experiencing it as they are. That just makes for stronger content to me and that connection.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think, you know, with a great director who's really communicating, you can overcome some of those CGI challenges. There are some great CGI movies and all that. But this volume thing, to hear Gina Carano and Carl Weathers, their main reaction to the lava tunnel is how to process their emotions about its reality. Mm-hmm. That means they're going to bring that in to the actual performance, right? Yeah. The greatest actor in the world can give a great performance. I think it's one of the reasons that Ewan McGregor is so highly complimented for his performance in the prequels, is even though he has talked about struggling with a green screen, he found a way and he comes off real and that he's in his environment. But the volume, to not have to have the actors do that work and have to have them just be able to be affected by the space, I think that's the biggest thing. It's not like, oh, now acting is easier. They right. are affected by the space emotionally, because I think there's a difference between, hey, you're playing a scene and it's, you know, you're really in a dark alley, or you're playing a scene and it's a hopeful thing and you're really on a beach and the sun is really on your skin. You feel different. And for them to feel like, I was actually afraid of falling out of the boat into the lava, means that they are affected by their physical circumstance and the mood of the space, right? That it just seeps into their performance.
And, you know, you are all going to look at the Acklay and know what the Acklay is when it's chased you. But like you said, Greg, this does not make the process of acting easier. I just think it just really adds so many more possibilities to what you can get out of the performances on set. And that was exciting. That does go back to my days of wanting to be on location and pointing off into the sunset, trying to give an actor advice, which again, directing, it's about 0.5% of what it actually is.
Did you take a pointing class when you were in school? Of like, here's how to point. I just, it is a lot of the behind the scenes of directors of like, look at them pointing at something.
They're pointing. They're talking about the emotion and the spaceship that's coming in. Yeah. I just, and I would do that. We'd be on set. And it's like in some high school videos of me just like, oh, this is directing, right? It's coming in from the north. What is? I don't know. Just go.
Put my sandwich over there.
Yeah. And then you get to college and like, all right, here's a light meter. I'm like, why do I have this? I want to point. So, but George Lucas, just his stories, the world he created inspired me back then as a kid. So it makes sense, especially when Bryce Dallas Howard kind of closes out the show with what they called George's Garage. She talked about George Lucas 20 years ago, you know, which again, she very well is probably witness to as we mm-hmm. her life. She talked about, you know, and Kathleen Kennedy talks about this too, but Bryce Dallas Howard talked about George imagining this, talking about this virtual reality, and how here she is walking onto what feels like George's garage, because he said, we're going to make these movies in garages. Kathy Kennedy then talked about George coming very close to building something like this on the Skywalker Ranch grounds. They talked about down the hill, there was going to be a warehouse down there. We could do it. So I just feel free to talk about anything in this ramble, Joseph. But I, again, going to this, how does it feel? Make you feel as a Star Wars fan? I just was, again, real proud and real happy to be a fan of Star Wars and George Lucas, for all of his occasional grumpiness and flannel shirts and faster, more intense, to go that it's all synced up, and he had a vision for what could be, got so close. And that's an interesting thing. If he unlocks this in 2009 or 10, what do we got? I don't know. Again, I was moved by a lot of this tech talk in this episode. What'd you feel about George's Garage?
Yeah, I mean, just calling it George's Garage, having this section introduced by Bryce Dallas Howard, who obviously does have somewhat of a personal connection and relationship to him, really opens it up. I really like that Kathleen Kennedy is so vocally in all these episodes championing George Lucas and saying, like, yes, he was always 10 years ahead of where he wanted to be. And that connects to, you know, Lucas having both successes and sometimes stumbles, but being this kind of kid at heart who dreams of seeing these exotic, exciting things on screen and wants to find a way to happen. And it almost, to me, we're going to talk about Attack of the Clones on the main show this week, as you said, but yeah, to me in Attack of the Clones, there's some of the tech that doesn't quite work. Honestly, Uncanny Valley Tarkin doesn't quite work for me in Rogue One, but in all of them, there's this spirit of, God, I'm trying to get somewhere and I want to try to get there. In the idea that maybe the volume is George's Garage and one of those tipping points where we've got to something new just celebrates that spirit of the, you know, sometimes successful, sometimes frustrated dreamer. Yeah. So I think that was my big emotional reaction to it. And then one other big thing for me was that all of these different pieces of technology had to come together. And the video game stuff was cool, but the video game stuff also really affected me because I've had bad experiences in life where I have been affected by different groups of people or different ideas, kind of self isolating themselves, kind of a siloing of, this is the way we do this kind of comedy, and that doesn't have any interaction with the way we do this kind of theater. All sorts of different kinds of examples of that in my life where people have kind of said, we're over here doing our thing, and we get so involved in that world. The fact that one of the great breakthroughs in movie and television making was somebody else just looking over and going like, oh yeah, video games, those things that are supposed to rot your mind that we don't really respect as a culture. Oh, thanks for that technology. That's what we were looking for.
Yeah.
The fact that it is that spirit of not just innovation, but working together and seeing paths, you know, unlearning what you have learned. Of like, it doesn't just have to be about how do we project one still image. Maybe the whole world exists and you can turn around in it the way you do in a video game. And maybe that's what we need.
I love that. Reaching across, looking out. And look, I'm someone who, I sometimes am hindered by this is the way I do it. I'm just hindered by it. And I've had to address that in my old job, and I have to address it with tech now and how I do things now. And it's exciting to see it on that level. I like that you brought that up. I love also too, that you brought up there was something really interesting and sincere in Kathy Kennedy's voice when she was like, George was always 10 years ahead because she lived it. She's been there. She's seen it. And I don't know. I like that a lot. It just was a little tiny moment. I love that.
Yeah, but it was powerful.
Yeah. What do you think? I wish maybe there is, because we've seen all these shots of George on the set, right? I wonder if they documented the first time, because he'd heard about it. He clearly thought about it and was like, let me go down and see what's going on. His son Jet worked on the Mando, kind of low key as a PA, I believe he was, kind of on the production side. I want the first moment that George walks into George's garage. And I'm sure it's low key. I'm sure he doesn't make a move, but I just want to, does his heart flutter? Does he shed a tear of joy or just go, yeah, this makes sense? I want to.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the things that's just kind of so fascinating about this human being who dreamed all this stuff is that he's low key, right? I don't. Yeah. He's just got that Starbucks cup. See that Starbucks cup in his hand? Like, I bet they spelled his name wrong on it somehow. Because there's something that's so fascinating. He's clearly a dreamer who wants to see these exotic worlds and these new adventures, but he conducts himself in such a just traditional, pedestrian, I'm just a guy from Northern California way.
Yeah.
So to see him walk into it and go, oh, cool, you did it. Awesome. Yeah, I tried to do this. Yeah, I ran into some problems. Anyway, great job.
Yeah. You know, it made me think, you know, there was that Twitter thing going around a couple weeks ago of, you know, what's your most mundane celebrity interaction or sighting or whatever. And I saw someone had tweeted out, hey, it's not mine, but I just love this picture of George in a food court because his wife was at a convention and something. He was at the same time just getting like a plate of Sbarro's. And I had seen it before, but I just had focused on it. I was like, I love this man. For everything. I just, all the grand things he's done, but I love that he's in his flannel eating some kind of mall lasagna. Loved everything it represented. And I think you're right. And I thought about the, again, you and I are in the same mind here. I saw that Starbucks cup and I'm just laughing because yeah, it's coffee. It's Starbucks. Hey, Daenerys Targaryen has a coffee cup. We found out, but for have George to be like, no, I'll just have a Venti, Pike.
Yeah,
thanks.
And okay. I almost think he doesn't know Venti. I think he's. I could be totally wrong. I think he's. Like I can sometimes get grumpy at the hotel when I'm at a convention. It's early in the morning, and I just spaced, and I can't remember which one is which. And I just, yeah. I know. I'm sorry, but can I have a medium coffee, whatever that means to you? I'm sorry. I know, but
love it. I love it. George Lucas, he's just like us people. We're about done here, and this is a great episode. I struggled to kind of put together the notes for this because there were so many things. Just I love that they were over my head, but I love the emotional core stuff. But great stuff in this episode, Joseph. Appreciate your insights here. Any final thoughts on what we learned here, the tech, anything we missed?
Yeah, I think my only other thing is I loved how pumped Giancarlo Esposito was. Like, you know, we're getting these kind of drops of wisdom and awe and camaraderie between a lot of the other actors and creators, but it feels like they just shot his scene with that super cool practical darksaber and then did that interview immediately afterwards. And he's like, I can stand on my TIE fighter. He's so into it. And it's so great consistently. I know, you know, they're editing it. And if somebody was real negative, probably wouldn't make the cut. But it's so great to see what feels to me is such sincere enthusiasm from so many of these people who feel like that was like a kid who just got to play with his action figures from Giancarlo Esposito.
Yeah. I love it because he's in costume. He's there. He's on board. Yeah, I loved it. I love that good stuff. And you know, VR stuff, it blows my mind. It meant that doing that, the VR experience, the Star Wars thing, just like how quickly you kind of adjust and then you're in it and you think those stormtroopers are shooting at you. I can only imagine now you get to do that on film or, you know, digital cameras, whatever you want to say. Beautiful. Loved it. And I really loved the joy. There was a lot of joy for this technology in this episode.
Absolutely. I'm very excited to see what the last four episodes are because I don't think they have pre-announced what the topics are.
And I love it. I love the mystery. I've been watching these a little bit later, so I see some of the tweets and stuff go out and I'm like, oh, that's what we got this week. So I love that. I don't know. We keep joking about one completely dedicated to Werner Herzog, but the child would make some sense, right? That's the other big technological advancement in this series.
Yeah, I will go into the volume and flip some real tables if they do not have an episode on the child. They're going to have an episode of the child. And then it'll be interesting. You know, you could break it down: design, writing, music, full Werner Herzog episode. And, you know, I'm really excited to see what else they highlight.
We will be here to break it down regardless. We love doing this. We love you guys listening and following along. If you want to join the conversation or share just some of the insights and feelings you had of the technology and the volume, you can reach out on Twitter. Follow us at Force Center Pod. Use the hashtag Force Center. Like our Facebook page, our Instagram page. We are on YouTube as well. Show and Tell episode 5 was released this past weekend. We got a new In Memoriam on the way this coming weekend if you're listening at the time of the release of this episode. And also, you can go to tpublic.com for merch at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter. Force Center has a Patreon page, and your support makes cool things happen, like the new music from Tony Thaxton on Star Wars Ranked that debuted last week. Go to patreon.com/ForceCenter to support there. And as always, if you want an audiobook on us, go to audibletrial.com/ForceCenter and try an audiobook on us. And don't forget, we do our own things too, even things outside of Star Wars. Joseph, you got anything going on?
I can't talk about it. Anyway, I do have some stuff coming up, and you will be able to hear all about it if you follow me on old Twitter and Instagram at Joseph Scrimshaw, and you can check out my website, josephscrimshaw.com, for all sorts of other adventures. And I'm trying to get better about remembering to plug the Adult Swim show that I've done some writing for. That is called Tigtone. The first season is up on Adult Swim. Just go to adultswim.com/Tigtone, and season two coming in the fall.
Oh, yeah, do that. Check out Joseph's episode with the great Fred Willard featured in it there. You can go to KenApsock.com for information on all the things I do. Got an appearance this weekend coming up, and now it looks like it's happening. Mainframe Comic-Con, doing a virtual Comic-Con. I'll be hosting a 30-minute Q&A with Kevin Shinnick, the author of the Force Collector book that just came out. That is being confirmed even as we record. So I'm saying more information forthcoming. Again, go to KenApsock.com or just follow me at KenApsock. That's it for this week. We have taken a deep dive into the volume, and we found a lot of joy there. We'll see you next time here on the Mandalorian Report.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.